same thing over and over again can get very boring, especially if you're a multi-million dollar corporation that produces a weekly television show. The WWE is known for being the biggest sports entertainment company in the world. Ryan, Keith, we're talking about the WWE, the men in tights. We have professional wrestling, the squared circle. Woo. So logically, they've delved into other things. We're talking about football with the XFL. We're also talking about movies because they're already acting inside of the squared circle. So why not think outside of the box, or I guess outside of the circle, to do this? So in 2002, they spawned WWE Studios so they could have movies starring their very own sports entertainers, dare I say wrestlers. And in 2006, they actually dipped their toes into the horror movie genre with See No Evil. And one of us actually purposely told the other members of this podcast, hey, we should talk about it on a Cast to the Past with a brand new episode each and every Sunday. Usually I'll say we talk about the good stuff, but we've talked about the Super Mario Brothers movie. I think that with that beautiful voice everybody just heard, this is the sequel to the So Bad It's Not Good, It's Just Terrible. But my name is Juan Velez. I am from Puerto Rico. Joining me as always from Boston, Massachusetts, we have Mr. Ryan McNulty. Now, Ryan, do you remember the first WWE studio film that you watched?
I do. The first WWE Studios movie that I watched in full was 12 Rounds, starring John Cena. And I fully expected it to be this over-the-top cheesy action flick that was going to be so bad it's good. But this was just like, it didn't give you anything to even have fun with. It was just so bland. And I didn't have a lot of fun. I was like, wow, that was just the most boring action movie I've ever seen in my life. It wasn't even so bad it's good. It was just bad.
I think you can take out the action part and just replace that with insert genre here. And then we're just talking about WWE Studio films. But ladies and gentlemen, it is my lack of privilege to introduce the man that selected this topic, this movie for this episode from London, Ontario, Keith Poschick. Keith, When you think about WWE studio films, what is like your expectation of movie quality when you sit down, you grab the popcorn, and then it's on screen?
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever dug a hole in the basement of a house? Like, ever had to like break any concrete and keep digging a hole going further down than what a basement would be? Well, that's about where my expectations of a WWE film live. It's, if you go to the bottom of a barrel, go about two stories further, and that's about where my expectations lie. I was thinking about it while Ryan was answering your questions, and I think this viewing of See No Evil might be the first WWE film I've ever watched.
Really?
Yeah, like I haven't seen any of the Marine movies. I skipped 12 rounds. No. What was that one where Rusev had a gun and he was holding a WWE show hostage?
Breakdown.
I've seen that one.
It was something like that. Yeah, that's like one of the later ones, actually.
Yeah, I saw that one as well, with starring Dolph Ziggler, and Kane was also in that movie too.
I'll find out the name in a second.
So for context, all of us are wrestling fans. So this is one of the main reasons why Keith so beautifully wanted us to talk about this, because when...
Well, not just that, but this episode comes out on May 19th. I think that's the most important part.
That's literally the...
You know what happened on that day, Juan. You know what happened on that day. They're all going to pay.
It was called...
They're all going to pay.
You were right, Keith. It was called Countdown.
That's so bad.
Just think about the names of these movies. You have Condemned, The Marine, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You have See No Evil. There was a
Knucklehead,
sequel to See No Evil.
Legendary.
Oh, God.
The Chaperone.
The Chaperone. Whoa. Wait.
Didn't
was
like
that
and Shawn Michaels.
Barricade?
Shawn Michaels has a Jesus movie,
I think. Which was
movie,
the one with
I
the
think.
Big show? Which was the one with the
that
big show?
That was Knucklehead.
Show? Knucklehead.
Yes.
Of course. Of course.
There's literally one called The Day. Maybe they'll make a sequel, The New Day, and it will actually be a good movie.
Oh my goodness. This is not going to go well, but the craziest thing about this is that, yeah, The WWE had the greatest opportunity to not only produce these movies, but because they have their weekly television programming, they would also promote them. So it's like this back and forth thing, because if somebody goes to the movies and for whatever reason they like what they see, then maybe they want to check out Monday Night Raw. And then on the flip side, if they actually like Raw, they can watch the movies and go like, oh, WWE, there's a reason why you should only stick to things in the squared circle. So what did you guys
think?
At this point,
if someone actually likes Raw, they may enjoy a WWE Studios film.
Yeah. That's another thing worth pointing out. We don't really watch wrestling nowadays, with the exception of Keith every now and then. But when this came out, let's go all the way back to 2006. This was a fairly hot period for us. This is after, many years after, the acclaimed Attitude Era. But Kane was a big part of the Attitude Era, and he was a big part of this one. You know, he used to be a mass superstar. They took the mask off, and then out of all the people that they thought would become a great actor, then again, we're talking about Knoxville or Knox County, whatever mayor, so anything is possible in life now. We have See No Evil. What was your initial reaction when you first heard about this? Because the three of us were friends at this point, so we actually talked about the initial reactions way back in 2006.
Back then, my expectations were actually pretty high for the movie, because like you mentioned, Kane had been a staple in the Attitude Era since he debuted in 97, and since then he's been playing a monster on TV, though sometimes it wasn't the best. More often than not, he played a believable, really good monster. So if you take that ability and put it on the big screen, it seems like a natural progression. Did it hit? Well, maybe not, but the idea of the big red machine going on the big screen seemed like a pretty good fit.
Yeah, I agree that at the time, and I know, I agree, Kane could totally fit as a horror villain. And at the time, I thought, oh, that makes total sense. But I think even then, I had very little faith in WWE being able to execute a good movie.
It's true, because really, wrestling is subpar storytelling just done in a live form. So the WWE has been very good at subpar storytelling for like 30 years at this point. So really, this movie
is right in line with that. On subpar storytelling.
They really did. Because if you go back in the hottest period in wrestling, the Attitude Era, if you go back and look at some of the stories behind it, it still falls in subpar. The best things that happened in wrestling are not because it's a amazing story that you will write home about, is because a man pulls a gun on his boss and he pisses himself in the middle of a ring.
Give me a hell yeah, and insert beer and Zamboni 316. But I want to ask you guys a quick question, we haven't really talked about horror films, even as friends. I think like this is the one genre where we haven't really just talked about, like, what's your favorite horror film of all time? Just generally speaking, I know sometimes it can change, but just something that you can pop in and you can enjoy.
I lean more towards the side of like a psychological thriller, more something that will mess with your mind, very much in the sense of like The Sixth Sense or along those movies where there's a twist, though it can be done very poorly. See most of M. Night Shyamalan's work. But more than that, than a slasher film where you have your Jasons, your Freddy Kruegers, but there are room for slasher films. You just have to be in a mood, or I have to be in a mood for one of them. Those are more popcorn movies to me than actually sitting down and being scared from a film.
I would agree with Keith a lot on both his kind of genres. Definitely, I grew up with being a big fan of the slasher films, Freddy Krueger, Jason, Halloween movies. That's what I loved watching growing up. Then definitely more recently, I really enjoy the psychological horror movies where they don't rely on cheap jump scares to freak you out. And of course, you could look at a movie like The Shining, but more recently, one of my favorite psychological horror movies was 10 Cloverfield Lane with that had John Goodman in it. I absolutely love that movie. I thought it was really, really excellent.
One of my recent
only
films.
Movie,
oh, God.
Oh, The only movie that's ever made me like not able to sleep is a movie called The Fourth Kind. After watching that, I was so like freaked out and screwed up.
That's the BS one where they used fake footage.
Yeah. They used fake real footage. Tripped me out so badly.
It was freaky because I thought it was real, but what they did was they filmed like the cinematic theatrical parts of the movie, but then they had like these crappy VHS looking filmed parts, but those were also fake. But because they were going back and forth between the footage, they were making you think, oh, this is like real footage that happened in some crazy Alaskan town, but it was all bullshit.
Yeah.
For me, I think the most recent movie that I liked, was it called A Quiet Place? It was the one where the family, they couldn't make any sound and things like that. And I loved it because I think that horror movies, more so than what you visually see, is what you hear. The crunching sound, you know, especially when they do the jump scares and they have like the screeching sound. So the fact that they had a movie where they flip that, right? It's all about the silence and everything that happens before that.
Play Silent Hill.
I really do need to play that. I feel like whenever we mention horror, Ryan's like, I got to get my Silent Hill reference in there. Exactly. But
I'll force
going
it every time.
Back, I love the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies. The original, the remake. I also like the Dawn of the Dead movies. But I think that this type of movie, like the Friday the 13th, like the Freddy Krueger movies, honestly, for me, wasn't a big fan. It was just something that I didn't grow up enjoying.
Cheesy. They're more cult classics than anything now, because I have a tradition with my girlfriend that we'll go and watch some of those old slasher movies every Halloween, because she doesn't do too well with scares, but those are just so bad that they're not scary. And it's more, I don't know, I find them more like stupid fun than actually scary, especially those original Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street movies. They're campy more than anything.
The original Halloween, though, is still quite good.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic. Scream. Yeah. That's another movie that I really enjoyed, the first one. That was another good one. Now, here's the other question. Us as wrestling fans, whenever a Hollywood star tries to get into the ring, we tend to not take them seriously, right? Because they come from another world. But then we flip that here where we have wrestlers go to the big screen. So my question here is, how seriously, not just Kane, but we're talking about Stone Cold, John Cena, Triple H, The Rock. I think at this point, he doesn't even count on this list.
He transcends it.
Exactly. But for the other people around this time, like 2002, I want to say till 2010, would you take these wrestlers turned actors serious, or do you see it more as hey, you're trying, good for you?
I think it doesn't help when you're going off to do a WWE backed movie. It was one thing when The Rock goes and he's kind of, even though there were some co-produced movies by WWE that he did, he really went out there and tried these different movies, but it's hard to take them seriously when they're kind of still under the wing of WWE, where there's not as much faith in it. But I'm always willing to give them a chance, give them the benefit of the doubt. What they do for their jobs is a lot of acting, so they have more practice than almost anybody. So it's definitely worth giving them a chance. And if they really do get more time, I think a lot of these wrestlers have proven to have very, very strong careers as, you know, they get better and better. We see John Cena and Batista's careers really developing in Hollywood. It's not just The Rock. So that skill in wrestling really can pretty easily translate over. It may just not happen right away. It takes a couple movies, because even The Rock's first few movies, it was, no pun intended, a little rocky for a while before his career took off.
Nice.
But if you go back and look at 2006, those examples hadn't really presented themselves yet. When we're talking about previous movies that wrestlers have been in, we're looking at things like Santa Claus with Muscles, Santa's Sleigh with Bill Goldberg, Thunder in Paradise. Blade Trinity.
with Triple H.
That's true. Triple H had a cameo in Blade Trinity. That was probably the best one up to that point. I mean, it's no Santa's sleigh, but what is? Or Steve Austin had a really good cameo in Walker, Texas Ranger. Or was it Nash Bridges? I think it was Nash Bridges at that point. So there wasn't really an established bar of wrestlers making that transition successfully, because they always kind of went back to wrestling when you're looking at people like Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart, and Rowdy Roddy Piper that tried to make the transition. They always ended up back in wrestling. Before The Rock, there wasn't really that successful example. So,
well, hey, They Live with Roddy Piper was
brother,
awesome.
Brother.
True.
I feel like we got to mention Hulk Hogan in this conversation. So
he's the original.
Yeah, but let's go quickly down memory lane just to give everybody context. So in 2002, WWE launched WWE Studios, and then they had multiple movies that, as Ryan mentioned, some of them were co-produced. So that's where we have a rundown, Walking Tall, which starred The Rock. But then in 2006, we had two movies. First, we had See No Evil, and then we had the very first Marine movie, which is insane. I think we're up to like six Marine movies, and I'm not
something
even joking.
Like that now.
Then we have The Condemned, and I think with Condemned, there's more than three of them. I've lost count. It's like the Home Alone movies, like really? After the second one. Yeah. Actually, can somebody look that up, Ryan?
I'll check the wiki.
It's so sad that this is something I'm actually excited about.
I see a
about.
Condemned 2. Is there a 3?
Please tell me there's a Condemned 3. Please. No?
I don't see it, but there's six Marine movies.
Six? When did the last one come out?
2018, actually. It has The Miz and Becky Lynch and Shawn Michaels as well.
Right, right, right. So we saw those promotions recently. So
there was a movie called Mohawk with Luke Harper in it? What?
What?
I need to watch this. Oh my, no. Did I just say that? I actually got excited about the WWE Studios home. But let's actually go back to See No Evil now. When, none of us saw it when it first came out, right? I don't think we did.
Correct.
Rightfully so. Okay, so this is the first time, though, that we're all watching it. So, unless Ryan watched it beforehand.
No.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, 2019. Okay, yeah. Cool. Keith, give me some general impressions about the movie, expectations going in, and then the harsh reality as the person that selected this for the episode.
Well, my expectations were incredibly low going into this, because the entire premise of this episode is the May 19th joke and the fact that it happened on this day and they're all going to pay. But just here, you don't really hear much about this movie. And then in doing my pre-research, I noticed that it has a staggering 9% on Rotten Tomatoes. So at that point, I'm like, oh boy, we're in for a real wild ride. And I was not disappointed. This is like if you took every single bad, they looked at all the bad slasher films and were like, how can we do this worse? What are the things that we can do to make this actually worse than the worst movie you've ever seen? And they just did that. A lot of bad jump cuts, a lot of stupid jump cuts, a lot of just useless parts of the movie. And then it all kind of culminates together with this amazing end credit scene where a dog is peeing in the eye of Kane, of Jacob Goodnight's character. And that is really, as far as I'm concerned, the perfect metaphor for this movie, because it's like somebody pissed in my eyes for about an hour and 12 minutes. And I think that's the best way to sum up this movie.
Can you try to summarize the plot? There's a plot in this movie.
So there's a murderer, I guess, that's named Jacob Goodnight, that's played by Kane, and he likes to cut people's eyes out. He basically likes to Clegane people's eyes and just like pull them out of their head. And eventually his mother lures people to a hotel and he Cleganes their heads, and it's a very, very, very cliche what are they called? Delinquents.
Keith,
going
okay,
to
buddy?
A hotel.
Do you need to tag out, Keith?
I'm gonna do this. Okay. Actually, thinking about this plot is quite confusing. So, Jacob Goodnight's
brain
mother
is literally melting as he's trying to describe this movie.
We are watching a meltdown happening right now.
So, back to the plot. Jacob Goodnight's mother lures this cop that shot him in the head a few years ago to this hotel for some unknown reason, and he brings a bunch of delinquents with him, prisoners, and then the entire movie happens and you find out that they were just extras in this plan, so this entire thing that you've been watching for about an hour becomes completely irrelevant because you're like, oh, you're just a bonus, his mom says, and then they kill Jacob Goodnight, and then a dog pisses in his eye, and that's about the sum of it.
The one thing that just did not make any sense to me, even after it was revealed that this is all a plot to just get people killed, is that, hey, let's take just this random group of kids, and they got to clean this place for 3 days, and they're not even attempting to really clean it. It's like the most abandoned place. It hasn't been touched in 35 years. And it's like, they're trying to clean it, but they can't even make it look real. It's just like, it's so insane. And then inside of the place is supposed to be a safe with some money. So this is almost like a maze-like place. And that's where eventually one of them finds a body that had not been murdered too far apart. You know, maybe just a couple of days, a couple of weeks ago. So they speculate the fact that, yeah, there's somebody in this building. And then the cop, going back to the very beginning, is somebody that actually shot Kane in the back of the head, or Jacob Goodnight. And then because Kane or Jacob Goodnight had chopped his arm off. So it's like many different things happening at the same time, but nobody gives a crap. It's like the cop doesn't care that they're not cleaning. They don't care to clean. So it's just, hey, let's have some sex here. Let's smoke a little bit of weed on this side. And let's sleep in this dirty-ass building.
What health department would let a human being into that thing?
I have no idea, but I just want Ryan... How are you feeling, actually? I think is the real good question.
I would say that this movie might be one of the... I feel like I felt the least amount watching this movie than almost any other movie I've ever watched. Like, it was just such apathy, I would say, is just the biggest thing I felt, where I did not care about anything. I found a couple things amusing that the... Oh my God, the way that this movie is edited... the editing of this movie is literally like a video package of WWE. That's what it feels like it was edited by. Like, I want to look up who edited the movie to see if it's someone who was, you know, worked in the truck for WWE, because that's what it felt like. It was an entire like Bray Wyatt, old school Bray Wyatt,
right,
like video. The way
it's
that
like during
they did
the commercial
it
breaks of Raw, it's like, yo, keep editing the movie. It's got to be out in like 3 months. So
seriously, that is what it felt like. I also just wanted to comment at just the weird like MIDI theme that they used when the prisoners were coming out of their like out of the prison. And I don't get why they had to show that little like plate thing of what everybody did as a criminal, because it had no
it
relevance.
It means nothing. Yeah, it is
no
completely
the
irrelevant
movie.
In the movie. Even the part, like, I was trying to piece it together, and there was one where it's like, oh, this guy's a computer hacker. Guess how many of those computer hacker skills he used in that movie? Zero.
Yeah,
zip. It doesn't mean
the only
jack.
Thing that was relevant was what? Did the like the animal girl or whatever, right? Didn't she like break animals out? I don't remember what that was. But anyway, the other thing was, as soon as I saw the first flashback of Jacob Goodnight and I heard like the mother, I was like, all right, the old lady is definitely his mother, because she's the only old woman in the entire movie. Super predictable twist. You weren't rooting for any of the characters because there was no reason to root for any of them. Kane is the only one who had somewhat of like he was trying to change at the end, and then he didn't, and there you go.
The only character development in the movie. To go back to,
and it wasn't even good.
No, it wasn't. To go back to a previous point with that mum twist, it was like, hey, you remember Friday the 13th? Let's do that, but way worse.
And I think the problem is that you have to care about the characters, even if it's a little bit. But I think the fact that they chose a series of people that have been arrested, like I know one of them is because something happened with her family and she kind of killed a person or something. But
yeah, just kind of killed a person. That's okay.
Yeah, but that's supposed to be the good person in the entire movie. So you end up caring about nobody. So then Kane comes in, but then he's the one that actually has the dark past. Like throughout the movie, the more that I learned about him, the more I felt bad for him because he's not really the problem. He was created by his mother, right? Like you get these flashbacks that are really messed up. I mean, the man masturbates at one part of the movie, which I got to see the Knox Mayor masturbate in a movie. So I can say I saw that. Wasn't on the agenda.
2019, folks.
May 19th. And the other thing, going back to your point, Ryan, I feel like this movie is a high budget student film. I think we take for granted when a movie is edited so well that we don't notice the editing. Like even at the very beginning, you guys talked about like the lower thirds. My main complaint, and this was like 1 minute into it, they showed like this really random camera angle that you tend to see in hip hop videos while they're walking towards the van. The camera is like tilted to the side and I'm like, why? What are you trying to portray them as badasses? Like what are you doing here? It's like they couldn't make up their minds of, okay, so this is a horror genre. Like that is the genre of the movie. But within that, they couldn't make up their minds as to, okay, so who's the main character? Is it Kane? Is it the mother? Is it the officer? Oh no, we're just going to make it an entire experience because even the building, I feel like if they had made the building into like a bigger deal, like, wow, look at where we are. And then trying to find out some origins of the building. But no, it's just like, hey, there's a safe in here. We want some of that money. Everything is so superficial.
Does anybody remember the name of the building?
It was like Black something Hotel, Black Water or something.
Exactly.
Nothing.
But also, it was so, much like if, you know, for anyone who doesn't watch WWE, go watch old Bray Wyatt videos of... They tried to do this like overly spooky, like, oh, look at these cockroaches and all this, where it's like the building was so over the top, like dirty and spooky that you couldn't even relate to it. I mean, you look at something like The Shining where it's like, oh, this is a hotel like I could stay at. You know what I mean? And what they do within that is what's scary and spooky and everything, and you get sucked into it. But immediately you walk into this hotel, you're just like not buying it because it looks like you're walking into a freaking haunted house, and you know that there's nothing like relatable about it, and it just immediately takes you out of it.
And some of the things that they use in those cuts, like there was a couple of situations where I just found myself laughing during the action. The thing that comes to mind is during one of the chase scenes, I think it was around the elevator, where they're running away from Kane, and then all of a sudden there's this weird cut of like a mouse running at the same time. Then they go back to a different camera angle of them running. Like it's laughable, some of the weird stuff. Or in the middle of a scene, they'll be like, here's a cockroach, here's a doorknob, here's a dog, here's Kane, and now there's an eyeball, and now we're back to the action. It's just so inconsistent and incoherent.
So I don't know if I should give the movie credit, or maybe they just didn't know how to do it. Hold on. Is they didn't go for the cheap jump scares anywhere in the entire movie. At least if they tried, I didn't even notice that they were going for it.
I think it's more that route. I think they tried. Yeah. Because especially when Kane pulls the officer up and kills him, I think that's their idea of a jump scare.
But I think it was the editing, and they didn't have like the music to actually do a jump scare, right? Because you need that like quiet tension for a long time to be like, oh, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? But they never did that. So I was like, you know, hey, I give this movie a little bit of credit because a lot of bad horror movies... The only ace up their sleeve is the jump scares. And I'll fully admit, jump scares get me all the time because I don't know what it is, but they always get me. And this movie just didn't really have them. So I don't know if it was just failure to execute or they were actually trying to do something different. But either way, I didn't find it in any way scary.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with failure of execution there. Seems right on par.
And I think that one of the biggest things when you talk about the slasher genre is like, okay, you have a group of people, they're going to die. But the order is what really makes or kills the movie. Because think about the fact that first you got to build up, okay, so you have hypothetically 8, 20, 30 people, doesn't matter. But you got to pick and choose who's your protagonist, who's your antagonist. And they quickly identify that when they're in the van, right? They're in the bus on the way to that. So they portray two girls in particular, which I remember none of the names, not like it matters, but two of the girls, one of them was previously in a relationship with one of the guys. So immediately it's like, oh, he's the bad guy, she's the good girl. And then you have the other person that had a fairly positive past, all things considered. But I feel like if they had focused just a little bit more on the officer, because the movie starts with him. So think about the fact that the movie starts with the scene where they're going to this house, they find this girl, and it turns out that she had her eyeballs removed. Like, that is some scary shit. That is some really good stuff that they could have really capitalized on.
The deepest zoom on that cutout eyeball, comically.
And it loses the scary factor, because, like, as you mentioned, at first I was like, oh, wow, like, that's actually kind of nasty. But zooming into the lack of eyeballs, to me, was like, the horror element is gone.
Look at our crappy CG.
Exactly, because if it looked believable, but then you're like, okay, so this officer had his hand and almost half the arm chopped off. We fast forward, I think it was 4 years, but there was no reason to it. He gets randomly killed in the movie. It's not like we were tied to his family or anything like that. There was no reward. There was no emotional attachment to that. And I feel like just when you started to care about any of the characters, that most of them, like, you talked about the computer geek, Keith. His only purpose was like, and it's so, so crappy. Hey, I'm the computer geek, so somehow I have a blueprint of the building. Because I'm the computer geek. Exactly. That's as far as he goes. And then the other guy, he goes from, oh, I don't want to do that, to, oh, I want to do that. But there's no persuasion. There's literally just nothing happening. Out of all the characters, maybe, I know choosing names could be bad, but is there a particular character or moment that actually made you care about anybody in the movie?
No.
No.
Damn. See, I didn't have a conversation carried out for this part yet. Oh, what about the dogs, though? Hey, we got to talk about the dogs. Life is a balance. For every crappy part of the movie, there is an unforgettable part. So, the first part, like Keith mentioned, one of them is a dog lover. But then that one, I gotta jump to the end just because it's got to make me feel good. The girl gets pummeled, gets like thrown all the way off a window by Jacob Goodnight.
She basically bungee jumps through a greenhouse.
And then what happens? The dog licks her blood, and then just a swarm of dogs just comes in and destroys the dog lover. And I was just going like, finally, finally, you're giving me something good in the movie all the way at the end. But aside from that, is there any other fun part of the movie? I can't say good, but give me some redeeming qualities of See No Evil.
I got one thing that I actually thought was a decent idea. I actually liked the little bell system that Jacob Goodnight had, because even as improbable as it was to rig all these bells, I liked that there was an explanation of how he knew where people were within that huge building. So that is the one thing I give them.
Yeah. And that's about it. I will give the dog kill props. I would say that is the one good kill in that movie, the one that it made me wince a little bit, like, oh god, that's terrifying, because right before they had that kind of out of nowhere arm snap and she was still alive, and then it led to the dog mauling, the second best dog mauling I've seen in the last few years, only second to Game of Thrones.
But if you want to see dogs done well in a horror movie, I believe it's still on Netflix. You should watch Gerald's Game. It's pretty interesting. That's like another psychological horror type of movie.
I'm going to write that down.
Definitely worth a watch.
Yeah.
One other thing I will give is Jacob Goodnight's death was hilarious, where like you hear like the clanks as he's falling off the building.
That
was pretty
damn
funny.
Of course he hits, the pipe hits the sides of the building on the way down. Of course it does, because it's so stupid.
I'm actually going to bring it back and say, here's a problem with the movie, and it's a good problem. Kane was way too good at being Jacob Goodnight, and nobody else got even close to his level. Because, let's be real, the man looks like a horror movie character, like Glenn Jacobs. I'm talking about the human being behind the character, behind the mayor, behind the wrestler. He is a huge guy. He's, even though he's like smart as hell, he's a really huge guy that can really play that role. So every time he was on screen, I thought like, okay, so not only, because like usually you have these movies with people that have superhuman powers, but knowing how strong Kane is, he looks believable. Like whenever he's like breaking things down, he's got the axe or he pulls somebody up, it's like, yeah, you know what? I don't need to suspend my disbelief. Like, he looks like somebody that could actually pull that off. But on the opposite side of the fence, you don't have actors that carry the other side. I feel like people are more concerned about finding their friends rather than being scared. And that's something that I really thought about now. Like, with the exception of the first time when the geek, because I forget his name, found the body and he wanted to run away, I feel like people, they don't really care about what's going on. And sometimes we can talk about the editing, but I feel like even if the acting was just a little bit
better. First of all, they couldn't even smell the body that was like 2 feet away from them. Like, give me a break.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we got to talk about the big plot within the plot. So the big movie is kids go into this place. They got to technically survive for 3 days. But once we're there, the plot changes to the origin story of Jacob Goodnight, which to me would have been a far better movie. I think 90% of this movie would have been so much better if they had focused on that. Because what did you guys think about these flashbacks where you see him locked up in a cage as a kid, you see his mother talking to him while there's a human body next to him, and he's like an adolescent? I thought that was maybe the strongest part of the movie, but they didn't really focus on that.
I think the editing just made it look like cliche, like, oh, here's the spooky backstory. It didn't sell me on it. It just felt like more, oh, here's the scary stuff. Look at it. It's so reminiscent of just all the other kind of like slasher film origin stories that it just came across as very derivative and cliche.
And by that point in the movie, they'd beaten the jump cut to death. So it was just a little more of the jump cuts, like, oh, okay, instead of the random things happening in the hotel, now here's some black and white origin jump cuts. I guess there's more of that. It didn't really hit it. It was one of those things that felt like a cliche in horror films on an already long list of cliches.
Like, hey, we're trying to be Psycho, you know, the movie Psycho, but we're failing miserably.
Exactly.
When did the first Saw movie come out? That's something I didn't really think about here, but the reason that I say that as Ryan looks it up is that this movie is, I guess, divided into two parts. Horror movies have the scary part of it,
2004.
Right? 2004. Okay, actually, that adds up. The reason that I bring that up is that I'd say more so than a horror movie, this is a grotesque movie. It's a dirty movie.
Torture porn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's torture porn. How much do you factor in your enjoyment factor when talking about horror movies with that torture porn? Is that something that you look for, or is that like lesser in the scale of horror movies for you?
I don't really care for any of that unless there is a great story behind it, you know, or if you're invested in the characters, then having those moments can really amplify a scenario. I won't spoil Game of Thrones, but anyone who does watch it knows that there is a very grotesque moment that Keith kind of alluded to earlier that does really enhance and make a moment memorable. So if used correctly, in sparing use as well, it can have a huge impact. But when you're grossing people out for grossing people out's sake, it's not really effective. Also, side note, apparently, according to this movie, it's really easy to just rip people's eyes out like nobody's business.
Yeah. it makes the mountain much less impressive. But with movies like this, the quote-unquote torture porn movies, it's all about being able to earn it. If they earn the weight of those kills, then it comes off okay. It comes off grotesque, but sometimes that grotesque can be a good thing, whether it be for entertainment value or if you're looking for that horror shock, because there are examples of doing it right. The first few Saw movies are good movies. The Final Destination movies, the first few are good movies. Those are examples of it doing right. This movie, not so much, where it's just killing for the sake of killing. The big kill in that movie, which is supposed to be the police officer, that happens halfway through the film, so really all stakes are off by the end of that. It's just, it happens for the sake of happening. You're just left there as the viewer like, oh, okay, I guess that happened, moving on. Oh, what's going to happen to the rest of these kids? They don't earn it. There's no gravity to it. There's pretty much nothing they earn in this movie.
Yeah, because when you go back to the first Saw movie, I think the reason it was a big deal is not because of the grotesque part, is that you had characters that were together locked up in a room, and they're getting to know each other. So there's an emotional attachment. And then when you have to ultimately make a decision, you know, like, do you cut off something? Even from, like, the moment that they pull off a saw or a knife or something, it's like, oh, it's about to happen. But it's the lead up, right? Where with this movie, I feel like it's a bunch of noise. There's action for the sake of being action, grotesque for the sake of being grotesque. But I feel like maybe, I know, Ryan, you said that the Jacob Goodnight, like the flashbacks were a little crappy, and I agree. I feel like that was almost an afterthought. Like, they recorded that after the movie was done, maybe realized they needed to add a little bit more story, and then they just did that. But I feel like if the first 20 minutes of the movie were about Jacob Goodnight and not about the cast that did not matter, this would be a very different thing, because then all of a sudden, when he kills all these random people, you're going like, oh, wow, he's killing them, but he doesn't want to. He's doing that because he's being manipulated. But you don't really find that until the very end of the movie. And then he just kind of kills his mom like nothing, which is like, so it took you this long to do that now?
Yeah.
Why?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the first time that they use that flashback to the past, like to use it in a serious manner and to piece things together, don't they use that as a tool to further establish why he's jerking off to that girl in the cage? Like, that's the first time they seriously use that. So they're setting that up as the bar of this is the history that we're using this flashback for. So it's really hard to take it seriously at that point.
Which is the other thing that's just weird about this. So he doesn't really care about any character except this one girl, because she has a cross tattoo on her back. So that's the only reason, because crosses automatically mean religious, which I thought was so superficial out of anything.
So he could take
clothing that reminded you of something, you know, during your childhood. I'm like, really? But okay. So he takes this girl and locks her in a cage, surrounded by just a bunch of dead bodies, by the eyeballs and things like that. So he has his base, and eventually the rest of the cast, they do find that part, which is, Ryan mentioned, he had a little bell system, so he can actually tell whenever anybody is in a specific room. He has two-way mirrors, so he's got this place all figured out. What did you think about this part when you're actually in his base? You're seeing the eyeballs, you're seeing the dead bodies. Did you think that part of the movie was better than the rest? Give me something about this part. They're somewhat trying here.
I couldn't help but ask myself, why are they not able to, like, why aren't they just taken out by the smell? Because good God, that room must smell awful. Then by the time we got to the end of the movie, it's like they remembered, oh yeah, this place probably super sucks when it comes to smell. And once he's dead, they're like, oh my God, this smells so terribly. So it was really tough for me to get beyond that, just because that aspect alone just seems so unbelievable.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they don't really take things in until the script says so, essentially. I didn't find it all that impressive. Like I said, I didn't feel like I was curious to know the origin or more mysteries or know why, because it never made you curious to think below the surface that it provided. It was just very shallow horror.
Yeah. I gotta say, I'm disappointed in you guys. The entire time, I'm just waiting for you to bring something up. Something happened in the movie that I was watching it with my wife, drinking some wine, having some cheese. So there was something redeeming about my experience watching See No Evil. But there was one scene that pissed me off so bad, I had to pause it and just ask my wife why. So there's one part of the movie where everybody's hiding. They're hiding from Jacob Goodnight. He's a bad person. He's searching for the girl. He's searching for the guy. He doesn't find either one of them. So he's about to leave. All of a sudden, a phone rings. A phone? Okay, let's just analyze this for anybody that has not watched this movie. We're in a building with many floors, trying to hide from a person that logically your first instinct is, first of all, why the hell are you not leaving the building? Second of all, if you have a phone, call freaking 911, call your dog, call your... What?
Horror cliche 101.
Out of anything, Ryan, why a phone? That is like, you want to break immersion? We've talked about movies in this podcast that because they took place in the 80s, you know, there's no phone. So you're like, okay, I can kind of get why that doesn't happen. Even with Home Alone, I feel weird mentioning Home Alone in this episode, but the reason...
No, because it's accurate.
Well, true. But the reason in Home Alone is that, you know, he didn't have a cell phone, right? So it's like, they can't just figure something out. They can't just call other family members.
I mean, did you see that phone here? Juan, that looked like a Nokia or something. Yeah. Like, you really want to be dialing on that?
Dude, yeah. The battery in that will last a lifetime. And then he makes her swallow the phone.
Maybe this one's on me, but I didn't realize that was a kill until later in the movie when she didn't come back. Like, oh, yeah, I guess
so. Yeah, she kind of looks still alive.
Yeah. I'm just letting everybody soak this in. I'm exhausted. This is maybe... Let's actually talk about this. It's not even about See No Evil. I think this is about movies as a whole. I poked fun at Super Mario Brothers at the beginning of this podcast episode. That movie is bad, but there are redeeming qualities. Even some of the bad stuff, it's redeemable because of the way that maybe... You know, it ages gracefully in a way that you can look at it and laugh.
It does not age gracefully, yeah, but you can laugh.
You can laugh. Exactly. You get some entertainment. I feel like, remember this movie came out in 2006. Saw came out 2 years before. So this is like the gritty era of not just movies, of video games as well. I think a lot of video games that came out around this time try to go for realism in a time where maybe video games just could not achieve that. To that extent. So when I was watching this movie, I poked fun at it during this podcast, but it is an objectively bad movie. And my biggest shock is like, do you think the actors working on this movie actually think this is good? Do you think the production staff, the people editing, what do they think when working on this?
Well, I don't know about the people editing. I think they thought that was good. But yeah. Certainly, I think a lot of actors will literally, if you're just trying to start out, you'll take any role you can get. So I don't blame the actors at all. If I got a chance to be in a movie, as horrible as that would be, I would still do it.
Yeah, I agree. It's a credit to them at the end of the day. It's something that they can get experience doing, but... It just falls on the people like the director and the writer. If they can look at that finished cut and say, you know, I'm really proud of that, that is just a failure of profession as far as I'm concerned. Now, granted, it is from the realm of the WWE, and as we've established, not all things are great over there. So maybe it was just good enough for WWE. They're signing the paychecks, so they're going to write off on it. But to be proud of that, I hope there is not a person on this planet that can say, I'm proud I was involved in See No Evil.
Just curious, what's the last movie you remember watching that is objectively bad and you didn't have that Super Mario Brothers effect? It's just like bad for the sake of being bad.
I don't know. I try not to watch bad movies because I have respect for my own time.
I did see parts of... I didn't watch the whole thing, but I saw parts of Holmes and Watson because my roommate lost a bet and had to watch it. That is terrible.
The reason I bring that up is that I feel like maybe in 2006, it's maybe you could stumble upon a bad movie, right? But as Keith said, you know, you go to Rotten Tomatoes nowadays, and I get that people go like, oh, you gotta not trust the reviewer, trust your gut. But look, if you go to any website and it's not even like a 15% out of 100, when it's like a 6, you're like, when you're about to sit down and watch this movie, you're almost watching it for historical purposes of a movie can actually be this bad. So I challenge everybody watching and listening to think about when's the last time you purposely watched a movie going into it knowing it's bad, but you're still watching it. What makes you want to watch that? Like for us, we've talked about the fact that on this podcast, we want to get the good stuff, but the bad stuff is also a balance of like, wow, like, you know, even with the Super Mario Brothers movie, we talked about objectively good things. Even if it's just like unrelated to the video game series, we could do that. But here, it's been an exhausting experience. Oh,
I have an answer. Y'all ever watch those Hallmark Christmas movies?
Oh boy, yeah.
Yeah.
My mom loves them.
Yeah, so does my significant other. And yeah, I sit there and bear through those. So really, that's the closest thing that I have to that. And they're literal piles of trash.
Wow. But meanwhile, for everybody watching and listening, please go to Twitter, A Cast of the Past, and let us know either if you saw See No Evil, what did you think of it? Or as I mentioned earlier, which is the last objectively bad movie you watched going in knowing it's bad, but you still hit the play button? And before we ride off into the sunset here, we do have a couple of movie facts that I don't think they make the movie any better, but they're informational. Ryan,
all right.
What do we got?
Jumping into the movie facts. These come from IMDb. The first one, in the room with all the money pasted on the walls, every single bill had its eyes cut out. And I feel bad for the set designers because that was a complete waste of time.
Again, just a failure on this movie's part that they went into that detail, but not once was there a close-up of any of those bills, so the audience is able to establish that fact.
Exactly, and why? Because even when just talking about the eyeballs thing in general, I get that maybe what they were going for is that he's seen such horrific things, so it's almost like he's metaphorically, you know, removing people's eyeballs so they can't see certain things, but it's not obvious, and honestly, it's just grotesque, but not interesting.
On to the next fact. Glenn Jacobs, aka Kane, has stated that the best thing about making this movie, due to the hectic amount of traveling as a professional wrestler, was the opportunity it gave him to sleep in the same bed for 2 months.
Now, the question
take
is...
take your wins where you can get them,
I don't blame him for that being the best part.
But did he sleep in that hotel? That is the question. Maybe he's a method actor. That's possible.
It's true.
Let's hope not. But that's good, though. He got some rest. He deserved it.
All right. Well, we already mentioned this other fact here about how they used May 19th within WWE's storylines to promote this movie. Literally, Kane would start attacking anyone who mentioned the date May 19th on WWE television as sort of a shameless way to plug their movie. And WWE just loves to go over the top in promoting pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really surprise me that they would go to these lengths.
Because even on the WWE side of things, if I'm remembering everything correctly, even the promotion ended up being a really cool buildup with a failure to deliver. Because for a while, they were doing this whole May 19th thing. There was promos of like,
for
that
weeks.
I joked about, where it's like, you know what happened on that day, Kane, May 19th, they're all going to pay. And they kind of alluded to, oh, maybe this is the day that the story Kane was burnt by the Undertaker. He became Kane on this day, and that's why this date is so significant. up until we get to May 19th, yes, it ended up being the release date of See No Evil, but all that happened was that he beat the hell out of Rey Mysterio on a SmackDown or something like that. There was no significant they just wanted payoff.
They wanted to brainwash everyone into watching the movie.
And good on them, I guess.
So our last little trivia fact here, I think I'm going to leave to Keith to read because it's his favorite.
Mm-hmm. Writer of the movie, Dan Madigan, I hope I said that correctly, revealed the bizarre idea Vince McMahon had for Kane's character. He explained, "I got a call from Gregory Dark, the director. He says, we've got a little problem here. Vince has a suggestion about the movie. I said, well, it's his movie. And then he goes, Vince wants this scene in the movie where..." Hold on here. I'm going to take a pause before I say this one. "Vince wants this scene in the movie where Kane's character pulls out his penis and he wants it to be 3 feet long. I thought there was a connection problem," says Dan. "I said, Greg, can you back up and repeat that last line to me?" And he goes, "Yes, Vince wants Kane's penis to be 3 feet long, and none of the producers are going to say anything about it." So I just sat there stunned. That is the bar that was expected of this movie, and that is the most Vince McMahon story, and I just love it so, so much. Of all the things he could have had in this horror movie that he was building and that he was paying for, all he wanted was a 3 foot dong in it.
I guarantee you right now, there's a movie called The 3 Foot Dong.
Oh, don't search that on Google, though. Don't search that. And so, a question I want to lead to you guys. Where do you think that 3 foot dong would go in that movie? And do you
I was thinking about that. Oh,
I mean, I feel like there's an easy answer for it, where it's in the scene where he decides to get all touchy feely with himself. But do you think it would be like a jump cut of like, boom, 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 here comes the dong? Or would they like stay or, on
you
it?
Know,
or
instead of that like fire hose that the chick was bungee jumping off of, you know, she could have just been hanging from his dong.
Oh my God, no. No.
A 3 foot dong.
The sad part is, yeah, I think that scene where he was getting his funk on is probably exactly where that was supposed to happen. Because
where Jacob was getting his good night.
You're just supposed to hear a thud after he unzips
his Yeah. Like it goes dark, and then the cage, it actually has a dent at the top that's 3 foot long. You're like, yo, man, Kane got it on. What the hell? What the? Can okay. Imagine you're at this production meeting with Vince McMahon, the human being and the character, and he says that.
He just has his meat wrap, and now he's going to talk about this.
I don't even know what I would do. Like, if he looked me in the eye and said, is it 3? Like, out of fear, I would say, like, no, make it 5 foot long.
I want a 3 foot dong, damn it.
You're okay,
it's unbelievable.
Ryan?
It's, yes. It's both believable and unbelievable at the exact same time.
The other tidbit we didn't mention here, but I think it was speculated. I'm not sure if it was confirmed, but the original name of the movie was Ice Cream Man, right?
Like EYE. S-C-R-E-A-M, man.
And
ice
then I
cream,
think it
man.
Was also at one point supposed to be just called Goodnight or something like that. And then it got changed to See No Evil.
But get it?
Even
it's See No Evil. See? Eyes?
He rips the eyes out. Oh my God.
So but they don't even see if any you evil? Don't see the evil, you see no evil.
I will say
this
one last thing.
This has been a very
thing.
Evil episode.
Yeah, one last thing is, I know for years this movie was on Netflix, and you know, with someone, whoever I was with, would scroll through it, and they'd be like, "I'd be like, oh, that's that WWE movie. We probably shouldn't watch it." So, I passed it probably a dozen times over like the 5 years it was on Netflix, and I avoided it every single time. So, thank you, Keith, for bringing this. This amazing apathy to me.
You're very welcome. I wouldn't. If we could do it all again, I wouldn't change a thing. I'd make you watch this movie again.
For everybody that wants to watch this movie that Keith so beautifully suggested for us, here's something you can do. This is actually not a bad deal. Although, you can go to Walmart. You can go to Walmart, and for $7.50, you get the first. No, you get Condemned 1 and 2, The Marine 1 and 2, and get the See No Evil 1. And there was a goddamn sequel to this piece of crap movie that came out a couple of years later. And I don't even know what happens. I don't know how. But apparently the movie takes place after this one. How?
So he's dead, but he's not dead.
He's the Undertaker. He's it, guys.
He's the dead man.
We figured it out. This is the Undertaker origin story. Dave Meltzer gave it 5 stars. So for everybody listening and watching, please, for the love of God, give us a good horror movie for us to review down the line. Life is a balance. If Thanos said things are gotta be perfectly balanced, this needs to be perfectly balanced. So let us know. There are so many horror movies, and talking about sequels alone, like, I forget how many sequels Nightmare on Elm Street has, but it's like 8, 7, 8, something insane like that. But it's let us know. Yeah, it's a bunch of them. So please let us know which movies you would like us to review in the future. And speaking of reviews, if you enjoy what we do in the podcast, even if the movies that we review are sometimes not great, you can go to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app of choice and leave a nice review. Just let us know maybe which has been your favorite episode or which has been your favorite topic that we've discussed. We have some really cool things happening down the pipeline. So if you're a gamer, an upcoming topic, and we recorded this already, and I love our conversation. We're going to have a debate on, not a masturbate, we're not Glenn Jacobs. We debated. Yeah,
we're not pulling out our 3-foot dongs on this one.
Exactly. We ain't going to be doing any choke slams of that kind. We did a debate on physical versus digital video games. Which do we prefer? That's going to be coming down the pipeline. In addition to that, Ryan, what do we have in the backlog so people can cleanse the palate after this damn episode?
Well, if you enjoyed us talking about bad movies, you can go back and check out, as we mentioned, the Super Mario Brothers movie review, where, again, we have a nice conversation about a not-so-great movie. If you want to see a review about a movie we think is actually good, you can check out our review of one of the movies we looked at, such as The Matrix or even Office Space. And of course, we also cover video games, and we recently covered the cult classic Katamari Damacy. We covered the Switch Reroll edition. So tons to check out on the backlog on either YouTube or your favorite podcast app.
So with that being said, Thankfully, this has concluded, but we'll be back with another exciting episode of A Cast
to the
Past. Keith, I know we're doing a show, but I can't stop reading the See No Evil 2 plot synopsis. It's something special.
You know you have to read it now, right?
I'm not going to ruin the surprise for people. Just go to Wikipedia. And turn your brain off.
Go to Wikipedia, read it. Go to Twitter, let us know what you think of it. As Keith,
it only made $1.6 million. That's all you need to know about it.
How much did it
cost? That's too much money.
I'm trying to look at how much it cost. I can't find that yet, but I'm assuming it was more than $1.6 million.
Jacob, good night.
Damn it, I was going to do that.
Good night, Ryan.
Damn.